1620. Welcome to Let's Go Pensacola. I'm your host, Julio Diaz. Hope you're having a great day today, whether you're listening here live on News Radio 92.3 on Saturday afternoon at 4 p.m., or you're listening to the podcast version of the show. Wherever you get your podcast, whenever you get your podcast, you can listen to the show anytime you like, and we hope that you're going to do so. We hope that you had a good Christmas, and I would like to bring my co-host, Jeremy Branch, in right now. Jeremy, I hope you had a good Christmas.
I did, man. I had a really nice Christmas Eve. The wife and I went out and had dinner and went to a candlelight service, which I actually referred to as a vigil on multiple occasions. I think those are different things.
Yeah, vigil implies somebody died.
That's what my wife or the, told
or
me
somebody's
afterwards.
Missing.
Like, this is not my world.
Yeah, or somebody's missing or something like that. So not quite the same thing.
It was nice. And then yesterday, it was just hanging in and watching movies.
Nice.
Love all of that. I would like to start a petition that either Christmas falls on Friday every year, or alternatively, if there's days after that before the weekend, we just completely erase them from the calendar.
Well, I mean, you know, a lot of people, I mean, first of all, outside of, you know, our capitalist hellscape, I mean, our wonderful nation, most other countries have a holiday the day after Christmas. They have Boxing Day, uh-huh. or they have St. Stephen's Day, depending on, you know, what country you're in, where that day after the holidays is the day after Christmas is a holiday as well. And it's devoted to different things in different countries, but, you know, they get that additional day. I think, in fairness, a lot of companies probably take the day after Christmas off, especially when it's Christmas falls on a Thursday. And there are companies that do take like the whole like last 2 weeks of the year off.
That's what it should be.
But yeah, it would be nice. But, you know,
how was your Christmas?
Yeah, it was nice. You know, quiet day at the house with the fam.
Good.
Yeah, open presents, had dinner, and watched the. Three penultimate episodes of Stranger Things, which we'll hold and talk about that next week after the finale. That you can expect is the finale New Year's Eve or New Year's Day?
I think New Year's Day, my guy, but I'm not positive.
Yeah, it's one or the other. Not sure which, but we'll do. The plan will be the show next week will be just a complete Stranger Things, look
in memoriam, yeah. Retrospective,
dude. I don't even want to think about the words in memoriam with that show. It's going to be something. We'll see what happens. But we'll talk about Stranger Things, including the actual finale next week. So, you know, fair warning now. I'm giving you a warning a week in advance. There will be spoilers next week for all of Stranger Things season 5, including the finale. I know the finale will only be 2 days old by the time, maybe 2 days old, maybe by the time, it hits the airwaves here on News Radio, and it'll only be maybe a day old because the podcast does go up a day early. So again, one more reason to listen to this show on podcast. If you're not doing so already, the podcast does go up early.
Yeah.
So,
looking back on Stranger Things, then we're going to be looking back on the 2025, the year end here at the end of the year, because this is our last show of the year.
Yeah, this is the last show of the year. I will say that we will do a little into 2026. We'll do like a top 10 movies kind of thing like we normally do.
Sure.
But we decided we wanted to put that off a little bit, because I think both Jeremy and I aren't quite ready. We just, you know, again, with this falling so close to the holiday and everything, maybe didn't put in as much prep time as we would have liked to for something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And in fairness, too, I think there's a couple other things I would like to try to see before the end of the year. I feel like I always end up revising my list because we get so much of the artier Oscar type fare late in the year or even into the next year before we finally get it here in Pensacola, that I end up revising my list kind of usually up till the Oscars are awarded, basically.
Mm-hmm.
which isn't until like March now. So, we'll do it. We're not going to wait that long. We'll do it in the first couple of weeks of January at some point. But we thought there were some like overall looking at the entertainment for 2025. We kind of identified a few trends.
Yeah.
The joke used to be when I worked at the Pensacola News Journal, that within the Gannett company, Gannett is of course the parent company, also owns USA Today, et cetera, if something happened once, it happened. Something happened twice, it could be a coincidence, but if something happens three times, it's a trend.
Uh-huh.
So I think that Jeremy and I, our rule is a little stricter than that. I think it needs to be more of an overall trend, because we actually kind of debated which things we were going to talk about that we thought were trends. But, you know, something that's more than a coincidence, basically. Something that seems to be happening and seems to be part of the overall entertainment landscape. So, Jeremy, you came up with a lot of these topics. So I'm going to let you kind of direct where we start here. What do you want to talk about first?
All right. Well, if we're going to kick off this thing, I think we'll probably start with the short section, which is just kind of recapping the top 10 movies of the box office. And then whether or not these are movies that are going to kind of have cultural staying power.
Now we're talking
at number 10. Go ahead.
We're talking domestic here, right? Just to be clear.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Good clarification. Number 10. Captain America Brave New World. 9. How to Train Your Dragon Live Action. 8. The Fantastic Four First Steps. 7. Sinners. 6. Zootopia 2. 5. Wicked for Good. 4. Jurassic World Rebirth. 3. Superman. 2. Lilo and Stitch for Live Action. And 1. Minecraft. What do you think, man?
So I want to throw in one more little caveat here, and that's that we're recording this on the 26th. So there's obviously basically almost a full week of movie going left. So those rankings could shift a little bit. Something could move around a little bit. It's possible maybe possibly if it has a really strong last week of the year in the box office, for maybe Avatar or Fire and Ash to jump into the top 10.
Yeah.
It won't jump into number one, but it could possibly jump into the top 10. I think it's unlikely, but it's not impossible. But just with that little caveat in there, I guess the question mark is, what do we think?
Which of these movies are we going to be talking about?
Well, that's an interesting question, because I feel like some of these movies conversation has already stopped. When is the last time you heard somebody talking about Jurassic World Rebirth?
Yeah, that one really came and went, didn't it?
Fourth biggest movie of the year. $340 million at the domestic box office. And I can't recall the last time I heard somebody talking about it. I don't even remember a whole lot of people talking about it right after it came out.
No, and I kind of felt the same way about How to Train Your Dragon. What about you?
Live action How to Train Your Dragon, same thing. Like, I mean, there was an audience for it, but it's sticking around in people's minds. I'm not sure that it is. I'm not sure that... Lilo and Stitch, even. There was a lot of debate when it first came out about the changes from the original animated movie, and there was some discussion for a few weeks. But, again, I can't tell you the last time I've heard somebody talking about it.
Yeah, and, some of this might just be attributed to our personal styles and tastes, but we talked about in relation to music, just because it's the biggest and most commercially viable doesn't always mean it's going to be the one that has the staying power, right?
Yeah. And the same thing is true with movies. You know, you might have a movie that did really well when it first came out versus a movie like, the one I like to point out a lot is Shawshank Redemption. When it initially came out theatrically, was ignored and then got a bunch of Oscar nominations and got re-released and made some money and then became a legend on cable. In respect to the late Rob Reiner, Princess Bride. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Princess Bride is absolutely one of those movies. So we're going to continue this topic when we come back, and we'll talk about which of these films maybe does have long legs on it. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is with us on the line. And we're talking about the kind of the trends that we've seen emerge from pop culture in 2025 as we wrap up the year here with our last show of the year. And one of the things that we were talking about is kind of, you know, this, like the fact that a lot of the top 10 films of the year kind of seem disposable in a sense, in that they kind of come and go, and I don't feel like they're really necessarily in the conversation anymore. And we kind of talked about some of the films before the break that we kind of felt like have fallen out of the conversation already. I'm going to eliminate from consideration here anything that's still in theaters. So like Zootopia 2, number 6 is for the year right now. That's still in theaters. The long-term impact on that, or even the medium-term impact on that, isn't really settled out yet.
We'll have to wait and see, sure.
Same with Wicked for Good. I think, you know, it's fair to say. Although I do think that the Wicked movies as a whole are probably going to have some staying power. You never know, because I mean, Sam Raimi made an Oz movie a few years ago, and how often do you feel hear people talking about that?
Never.
And it made money. It did well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you never know, but I feel like because of the Broadway of it all, and the fact that it's such a long running show on Broadway, that will have some long-term impact, but we don't know yet. I think it's fair to say the first one has already had some long-term impact though.
Sure.
So we'll eliminate those from the conversation, but we talked about, you know, How to Train Your Dragon and Lilo and Stitch and Jurassic World Rebirth that kind of already seemed to have disappeared. How do you feel?
Brave New World, I'd add to that conversation.
Yes and no, but Brave New World and Fantastic Four First Steps, I think that because those are leading into, and Thunderbolts also, which didn't make the top 10, but just missed it. Because those are leading directly into Avengers Doomsday this year, and the excitement, or in the new year, I should say, and the excitement that's already building about that, we don't know yet.
Well, and you are going to be a mark for those, I feel like, as well as the one that I think we're about to lead into based on the bumper music that you use.
Agreed. That being said, like, I'm not big on Brave New World. I like Anthony Mackie. I like him as Captain America. I like that they gave him a shot. There are things I like about the movie, but it's not in my top 20 movies of the year.
Mm-mm.
You know, it's a lesser effort for the Marvel Cinematic Universe. And that's not a reflection on Sam Wilson or Anthony Mackie or the decision to go the route that they did. It's just based on the fact that the movie doesn't really stick together as well as it should.
Well, the way that I kind of teasingly said you would be a mark for the Marvel movies, I wouldn't necessarily be a mark for DC and Superman.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because I wasn't somebody that grew up as a fan of this character. So James Gunn and the character Superman had the task of Atlas, right? They kind of had to carry the whole world for Warner Brothers DC Universe on their back, and I feel like they just knocked it out of the park. I think that this version of Superman is one that might stick around for a while.
I agree. Number 3 movie of the year, so did very well on the national base. I think it did very well internationally too, but it has stuck around in the conversation in a way that those other superhero movies haven't, and in a time when the culture likes to talk about superhero fatigue, I think that this film broke through superhero fatigue. I still see memes based out of this movie and little reels and things like that, or clips of this movie all the time on social media. I think the kindness is the new punk rock thing became kind of a mantra for the year.
Yeah.
In a way that I can't tell you how many people I've seen talking about that, heard talking about that, seen, you know, t-shirts being made of it, you know, things like that throughout the year, and that song in particular, that song Punk Rocker by the Teddy Bears featuring Iggy Pop, kind of took on a life of its own as endemic of that theme. Like that song has changed its meaning by its use in the movie to where that is now the theme song of the notion that kindness is the new punk rock.
Man, that's really well said. That was one of my big takeaways from the movie. And speaking of which, it is really incredible the way that music can enhance and sometimes even transcend films. And I think another one that you and I would both agree is going to stick around, and another auteur filmmaker similar to somebody like James Gunn, but that would be number 7, Ryan Coogler's Sinners.
Oh, I have no doubt that this is a movie that is going to be with us for decades. This is an all-timer. It is my favorite movie of the year. It's one of the only films that I have seen more than once this year. And I think that it really is going to stick out. And it's, you can tell that by the fact that we're getting into award season, and we've already seen that it got cleaned up for nominations at Critics' Choice and the Golden Globes, and I think is going to weight very heavily in the Oscar race. This is a brilliant film. It's just an all-around brilliant film.
Both sung its praises. I think it is just got a cultural significance and kind of restoked people's love of kind of traditional blues music and cool take on vampires. Like, I feel like it's kind of redefined the vampire movie for the new era.
Certainly. And then, you know, there's the cultural discussion, both in terms of the influence of black culture, the influence of music, and the treatment of minorities. You know, all of that is a factor. The civil rights aspect of this conversation is a factor. And these are things that are reasons why I don't think this movie is going to go away. I think that I see this being one that sticks around for a good long time, and probably more so than any film in the top 10 this year.
I think they're both emblematic of how giving an auteur filmmaker the reins to make the film that they want to make and have a singular vision just always leads to something that is going to leave more of an impression.
Well, and interestingly enough, like the studio that really seemed to do that this year is Warner Brothers, which of course is also the studio that is up for being subsumed into another corporate behemoth at the moment.
Great.
So, you know, we'll see how that plays out after that happens, whichever behemoth ends up taking home the prize. But it goes into continuing the discussion of Sinners and what that means in terms of auteur-driven filmmaking. I think that the films that came out this year that are going to last, whether they were in the top 10 at the box office or not, do tend to come from that kind of auteur-driven filmmaking standpoint. And the two that I think everybody is talking about, the two that I think are probably going to have the most Oscar nominations this year, and the two that I think will continue to be considered for decades to come, along with Sinners, the other one being One Battle After Another.
Another movie, too, that has just such strong cultural significance as to what's going on in the modern world. And Paul Thomas Anderson is just one of those filmmakers that you cannot miss his movies, because every single one of them is just such an experience.
Another one that really relied on music in a lot of ways, too, in a different way than Sinners did. But the music choices in that movie were very illuminating as well.
Yeah,
and maybe in that regard, maybe Anderson has more in common with Gunn, because it was like existing pop music versus, you know, Sinners had a lot of original songs and a lot of folk songs in it. You know, and I think it's also something that, you know, you can kind of trace both of them back through to Tarantino, and before him, Martin Scorsese. Again, auteur-driven filmmakers.
Yeah, and another one we should throw in real quick is Zach Cregger's Weapons.
Yeah, which is the one I haven't seen yet that I keep meaning to get around to. I like Zach Cregger. I just have not seen that film yet. But yeah, a lot of love for that movie this year. It's still in the outside of possibly being in the Oscar conversation too, which is interesting that we might possibly have two horror movies in contention.
Wouldn't that be interesting because of years of us saying that they always ignore horror?
Yeah. I mean, even last year, I don't think Nosferatu got a Best Picture nomination.
At least we got The Substance.
Yeah, but there's a number there. That's true. We did get The Substance last year. There's a number of films that I think kind of throw back to that auteur movement that we kind of see have its ups and downs over the years. But, you know, I would maybe throw a movie that's just finally coming out locally here that's also very heavily in the Oscar conversation, Marty Supreme by Josh Safdie, with it, who with his brother Benny has also done a lot of more artsy, artistic related. Well, and now did Benny do The Smashing Machine, which also came out this year by himself, or was that both of them?
That was Benny's, and then this was Josh's.
So they pulled a Coen Brothers and split up and went their separate ways on these.
We'll see if it pays off, because I'm not sure the Coen Brothers did.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, there's and I think a lot of times when you see this kind of thing, you get a lot of R-rated films. I would put Guillermo del Toro in this conversation as definitely being somebody who has been very auteur-driven from the start, and his Frankenstein film this year. Definitely in the Oscar conversation as well, and doing good streaming business on Netflix. It was done for Netflix. It did get a theatrical release, but you know, it falls under a little bit different circumstances to where it's not going to necessarily jump up into the top of the box office that way. But you know, it's going to be something we're going to hear about in the awards conversation, and a version
along
of the
with
film.
Another one that you saw that I haven't seen,
which is
Yorgos Lanthimos' Begonia.
Oh, yeah, Begonia, for sure. Yorgos Lanthimos is definitely another filmmaker that belongs in that conversation. I would say Richard Linklater, who made a couple of big movies this year that haven't done very well financially but have been very well critically received, and then Chloe Zhao, even as well, as I would throw in there with Hamnet. But we got to take a break. We'll be back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line with me. We're talking about some of the trends in entertainment for 2025 as we wrap up the year here on our last show of the year. And we were talking about the auteur-driven films that have kind of been highlights of the year this year, and that I think are the films that we think are going to have the most staying power in the long term. Here's my question.
You know what we never really cleared up for the folks at home that may not be aware? What is an auteur filmmaker?
So an auteur filmmaker is, it's kind of the theory that the director is kind of, for lack of a better term, the author of the film, that everything that happens on the film is the vision of the director. And
maybe if you look at their filmography, it begins to create like an individual fingerprint, right? Like when you think of Tarantino, he's got his own specific style, and it comes through no matter what movie he's doing. And
sure,
Del Toro, like you mentioned before the break. So an auteur filmmaker is exactly what Julio said. Just somebody that has a distinct style that shines through, even that past, like your writers, your cast and crew, all of those things are, I guess, controlled very specifically by the director.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that has a certain, there's a certain prestige level associated with that too. They have the yes, ability to get the films made that they want to make and make them the way they want to make them.
That's a good point.
And they will, you know, sacrifice other things. I think there are people that, you know, you could put into that category that still make films that are very broad appeal or very franchisey. You know, I would say Tim Burton is an auteur director, despite
Absolutely.
The fact that most of what Tim Burton has done has been adaptations of things from other media.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, James Gunn qualifies, although he's in an interesting situation where he's running a studio now. So it's,
can you be an auteur? A studio head.
Yeah, I mean, that certainly is what seems to be what James Gunn is trying to do. Mm-hmm. We'll see how successful it is in the long term. We're getting the first couple of films that he didn't direct himself coming out in the next year. So we'll see where that goes. Here's the question, though. I mentioned that the studio that this year seems to have done the most with the auteur thing. The studio behind Sinners, the studio behind One Battle After Another, the studio behind Superman, which, mm-hmm. if we're going to have James Gunn in that conversation, counts. The studio behind F1, which has a lot of awards buzz. Studio behind Weapons, Zach Krager. Again, you know, Warner Brothers has been, and I will say in fairness, I think some of this has been a reaction to the bad rep that Warner Brothers got after they released stuff day and date during COVID that chased a lot of auteur filmmakers like Christopher Nolan away from Warner Brothers.
Yeah,
I think that their auteur year that they've had this year has been a direct reaction to that, to trying to rebuild relationships with the creative community. I think they've been pretty successful at that. They've been successful financially, and they've been successful from a creative standpoint in doing that this year. But Warner Brothers is up for sale. It's either going to be bought by Netflix or Paramount, depending on what the outcome of this hostile takeover bid that Paramount is trying to execute right now. Paramount itself was just bought by Skydance this year.
Mm-hmm.
So we have this conglomeration of stuff. Is it going to matter? Is the creative success of this stuff going to matter in terms of the future of Hollywood? Or because of corporate mergers and the fact that everything's got to continue to grow and make more money, and they're more and more afraid to take risks every passing year, are we going to get more auteur stuff? Or are we going to get just more sequels and remakes and franchises and stuff like this is going to be, you know, relegated to small independent film?
When I say I have a take, I guess I have more of a musing. And both you and I were both fans of the show The Studio. And many listeners will be aware of the phrase, one for them, one for me. And basically what that means is you compromise your artistic vision to do something commercial so that they will fund you to do the more personal projects. And you can think about that in any medium, right?
Right. And you can think about it in the overall aspect of a studio slate, in that, you know, again, to put Warner Brothers up as an example, number one movie of the year is a Minecraft movie. That is not anybody's idea of an auteur driven film. It's not anybody's idea of, a massive critical acclaim film. I mean, you could even say Superman, even though I think it did win a lot of critical acclaim and that James Gunn is a respected filmmaker, it's still a franchise film. You know,
Do you think that these auteur filmmakers and their desire for control can be really challenging for executives and producers and things like that, to where not only is there the cost and the risk associated with the loss of profit, but also you've got these difficult personalities who are very specific, where you could just pump AI slop out into the world and not have to deal with anybody's personality.
Well, and let's hope that that doesn't happen. But, you know, obviously the bottom line matters. You know, these uh-huh. studios are in business to make money. They always have been. But the question is, can you make money, more money with quality than you can with slop, AI, or otherwise? Is the potential there?
The pedigree of the awards at the end of the year, as long as a studio gets one of those noms, does that make up the loss that they might not have made as much profit? I think I phrased that poorly, but do you get what I mean?
I don't know, but I mean, here to put this into another perspective, of course, Netflix does not show up on the box office returns because they are primarily a streaming company, even though they do theatrical releases.
Uh-huh.
They have committed supposedly that if they buy Warner Brothers, they are going to continue to do theatrical releases for Warner Brothers films. I have my skepticism about that, but I hope that they're telling the truth about that.
We think we're safe for 2026, at least, though, right?
I mean, it's going to take some time for any merger to execute. So, yeah, 2026 mm-hmm. is, you know, not a question mark, I don't think. If you're looking at Paramount and what mm-hmm. they put out this year and what did well, their biggest movie of the year was Mission Impossible: The Final Reckoning, number 11 film for the year, just shy of $200 million. But, you know, yeah, Christopher McQuarrie's done the last few of those, but... You know, is that anybody? I mean, that's clearly a franchise film and not anybody's idea of an auteur film. They're right. number two film on the list for the year. And Paramount did not have a good year theatrically. Their number two film is all the way down at number 25 at Sonic the Hedgehog 3. Again, very much a franchise film. Very much not a big one. Your third film is a remake. It's The Naked Gun, which not really, if you've seen the film, it's not really technically a remake, but, you know, it's a franchise, an extension of a franchise. Their fourth biggest film of the year is their first original film that makes the list. That's Regretting You. That was number 40, and not a film that made a ton of money. You know, to be completely honest, you know, $48 million, $49 million at the domestic box office. So Paramount did not have a great year.
And when you talk about their Mission fifth film Impossible, The Final Reckoning. It made $200 million. How much did it cost versus one of these movies that Zach Cregger or Yorgos Lanthimos made?
Yeah, and everything else on the Paramount list this year, The Running Man, we're getting to Smurfs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Roof Man was an original film, so you got to give him that one. But then you get down to the latest SpongeBob movie. You get down to Novocaine was an original film, so... You have 3 out of 10 films that made, let's say, the box office top 100, and only 3 of them were original films. The rest of them were all franchise stuff. So if Paramount buys Warner Brothers, and Warner Brothers certainly has its share of franchises to be exploited.
Sure.
But when Warner Brothers had a record year on making these incredible creative decisions, what happens if Paramount buys them? Does Paramount honor that, or does Paramount say, you know what? We need 20 Batman movies right now.
And by the same token, I mean, we could say, how does Netflix treat them? But definitely point taken. I feel like this year's record kind of proves itself that they need to continue doing what they're doing and allowing these auteur filmmakers to do what they do best, because these are the movies that we're going to remember at the end of this year and at the end of next year, we'll probably be talking about for years.
I will say that Netflix always has its eyes on prestige in addition to having its eyes on just getting eyes on the service. So I would be a little less nervous about Netflix than Paramount in that case, but we went over this already. There are pros and cons to both possibilities. Got to take a break. Back with more in just a moment. You're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. We'll be right back. News Radio 92.3 at AM 1620. Welcome back to Let's Go Pensacola. I am your host, Julio Diaz. My co-host, Jeremy Branch, is on the line. And we've been talking about some of the trends in entertainment that we've identified over the course of 2025 as we wrap up the year with our last show of 2025. And Jeremy, one of the things I think is fair to say is that video game adaptations in mainstream media, be it film or television, they're no longer a joke.
Isn't that crazy to think about? There were so many years that you and I talked about how just there was a curse around video game adaptations. I mean, I've got a soft spot for Mortal Kombat from the 90s. Christopher Lambert is a fantastic campy Raiden in that, and some of the fight scenes are fun and stuff like that. But for the most part, they've been consistently pretty bad until, like you said, real recently. And with Minecraft being the biggest movie of the year, I thought, it seems worthy of addressing.
Yeah, I mean, and no matter what else you might think of the Minecraft movie, from what I know from the fans of Minecraft, it is a respectful and, well-received adaptation from that fan base. Like it's not just garbage. It played into a lot of things that mean something to that fandom. And, yeah. It may not be an all-time great film as far as the critics are concerned, but it definitely found an audience and resonated. Whereas some of the other stuff we might want to talk about maybe is a little more universally well thought of, I guess, for lack of a better term.
Well, while on the subject of Minecraft and films that have found a niche that the fans seem to like, Five Nights at Freddy's 2 was released this year. I know the original one came out before, but people seem to like those movies. Not necessarily the critics, not necessarily you or I, but it definitely has an audience.
Yeah, I mean, I understand having seen the first one, I haven't seen the second one yet. I understand the appeal. It maybe doesn't do a whole lot for me, but I get why there's a fan base, and those movies play very well to that fan base and do a great job of introducing why people love those movies to a wider audience. Like the feel of that game series is intact. The mythology of that game series is intact. Mm-hmm. It's there's nothing so egregious as casting a white guy as the Prince of Persia, or
that never happened. Did it?
Totally. Well, maybe, just drastically changing stuff about, like the original live action Super Mario Brothers movie.
Yeah. Where it's not even recognizable to fans.
Virtually everything about the property. Yeah. Versus the animated movie that we got, what was it, last year, the year before?
Mm-hmm.
Which I think we can put into this trend as well. Maybe it's a little precursor to that trend. I think we also look at things like The Last of Us, which is why I played that Nirvana song. It was so prominently used in season 2 of The Last of Us this year. And I think that's where it's really shining in terms of not just being a quick cash grab release that generally a lot of times doesn't even really make the cash, which has been the case of a lot of stuff in the past. But actually becomes something that is quality and is well-received and has not just a rabid following from people that are fans of the game, but people that discover the property through that adaptation, and of which I'm one. I've never played the games, and I love the series. I think the series is brilliant. And, it's also borne out by the fact that it's, the Sunday night HBO show.
That's
which
what I was
is always
say. You and I have carried the torch for the prestige television that comes on that Sunday night slot, and they had enough confidence in the creators of Chernobyl to go ahead and make them the showrunners of The Last of Us, and it was a really fantastic adaptation.
Yeah, and then of course the awards around it too, the awards and nominations that the show has received, and also true of Fallout, which was for Amazon Prime, which just came back. Have not watched any of the new episodes yet, but we've got 2 new episodes out already. Going to try to get to those this weekend because I'm dying to see it. But again, a very well-liked adaptation both by fans and by critics. And gained an audience. This got several Emmy nominations for season 1. I expect.
And Amazon isn't one that has a lot of flagship shows. Certainly, we talk about a few of the ones that are, but I feel like Fallout has been a massive hit for them.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty much been Fallout and the boys.
Yep.
You know, so, both in terms of commercial appeal and critical appeal, because both of those, I think, have had very strong critical appeal as well. So I think we've entered a new era to where video game adaptations are legit.
Yeah. So you think it keeps going?
I sure hope so. I don't know for sure what's on the horizon, but, I would like
Mortal
to see
Kombat
it.
Mortal Kombat 2, baby. I got high hopes for that one.
I mean, I think there's a lot of great storytelling in video games that, you know, those of us who aren't necessarily gamers maybe haven't been exposed to. And these adaptations are ways to extend that to that storytelling to a wider audience.
That's a great point.
And you know, for me, it's a lot of my problem is I like playing video games, but first person stuff makes me nauseous. So an adaptation for something like Fallout or Last of Us brings me into that world. And I can now consider myself a fan of that world. Makes me a little more jealous that I can't play the games, but.
Yeah, that's interesting though. That's a really good point. It's a way to share the stuff that gamers love with an even wider audience. And then for them to kind of be able to re-experience it with people that aren't aware.
Yeah, for sure. And just to move on, because we got one more trend that we wanted to get to before the end of the show. And maybe two trends, but I want to kind of start off with talking about anime. Now, Jeremy and I are not big anime viewers, but you cannot deny that at this point in American culture, anime is mainstream in American culture now.
Oh, yeah.
You have
Demon Slayer, Chainsaw Man.
Yeah. Demon Slayer, one of the top 20 films of the year at the American box office, currently sitting at number 17, I think still in theaters, too, has been in theaters since September. The fact that, you know, you can go to any Walmart in this country and buy Dragon Ball and Naruto and My Hero Academia and Demon Slayer merchandise. You can, the fact that you can go and see, you know, billboards for things like that in Times Square. And then you get into the influence of anime on something like probably the actual most viewed movie of the year. That was not necessarily a theatrical release, although they did a couple of theatrical sing-along releases. K-pop Demon Hunters does not exist without anime. It's not strictly speaking anime, but it is anime made by Americans for an American audience.
Yeah, biggest movie of the year was a billion-dollar Chinese animated film. Again, not exactly anime, but kind of in that same wheelhouse. And I'm not going to be the hipster. I guess I kind of am. I feel like it was in the 1990s when Dragon Ball Z kind of came on the scene that a bunch of people my age started kind of clocking it. And to your point, I'm not a huge anime fan. I certainly have some favorites, but I'd love to see the enthusiasm at conventions and stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
Look at the cosplayers.
Well, it's certainly a movement that has built over, I would say, 40-ish years, maybe a little more, maybe 50. I
but
mean, there,
to your
there's
point,
always
it
been there,
really broke out.
There's always been stuff. And I think the thing that we overlook is that when a new generation gets exposed to it, they don't think of it as something that's outside American culture. They just absorb it as, oh, this is a thing. You look back at Pokemon.
Oh, yeah, good point.
Pokemon is anime.
Yeah.
Pokemon became a phenomenon with American audiences, and I don't think American kids thought of it as something other. You go back a generation or two before that to things like, it's known in Japan as Gatchaman, but it was adapted as Battle of the Planets here. That was absolutely anime that got recontextualized and revoiced with American actors. And it aired on, you know, afternoon syndication right alongside Super Friends and Bewitched reruns. And I watched that as
Power
a kid
Rangers
and I loved
in a
it.
Weird way.
Yeah, Power Rangers is absolutely. But, you go back before that, you go to Speed Racer and Astro Boy. You know, these things are things that have kind of been subsumed into the American culture, but they're not American.
Yeah,
I think the genre at this point has been subsumed enough into American culture that it's no longer other anymore. It's mainstream.
That's a cool framing. I agree. I think you're right.
I think as many people can identify a character like Goku or a character like Tanjiro from Demon Slayer as can probably identify most of your DC or Marvel superheroes.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
I'm not saying all of them. I'm not saying Batman. I'm not saying it's Batman, Superman, Spider-Man at this point. But, you know, it's enough of a presence that it needs to stop being thought of as being other and just being part of the culture. Because that's where we are. And I think it's only going to get bigger. You know, again, Demon Slayer was number one at the box office for several weeks. It's going to be a year-end top 10 film. Or top 20 film, rather. You also had the Jujutsu Kaisen film that came out this year, the Chainsaw Man film that came out this year, all did big box office business. They're present on the streaming services, and you see it. It's there. So it's something we'll continue to watch in the new year. We will see you in the new year, guys. We'll be back next week with more. Until then, you're listening to Let's Go Pensacola on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Have a happy new year.